Hey, it's Nishant, and welcome to Higher IQ. It's Friday, August 21st. My cousins in India spent 3 years trying to get a visa to visit the U.S. 3 years. They filled out applications, they gathered financial documents, they collected bank statements, employer letters, letters of recommendation, property records. I'm not even kidding. All of this just to prove that they had a reason to go back to India after their visit. So they went to the U.S. Embassy, I believe it was in Chennai, sat in a waiting room for hours, and then they had an interview that lasted a few minutes where a consular officer decided whether or not they were allowed to come and see their family. The first time they did it, they were denied. So they reapplied and went through the whole process again, and also denied. By the time they finally got approved, which was on the third attempt, years had passed, and the trip that should have been simple felt like them winning a lottery ticket. Meanwhile, I've never spent more than 5 minutes thinking about whether or not I'm allowed to go somewhere. I book a flight, I show up, I hand over my passport, and I walk through. The only difference between me and my cousins is which country's passport we hold, and that was determined entirely by where we were born. Okay, let's get into this one. The Henley Passport Index ranks every passport in the world by how many countries its holder can enter without applying for a visa in advance. In 2026, Singapore ranks at number 1 with access to 192 out of 227 destinations. Japan and South Korea are tied for second at 188, and most of Western Europe is in the 180s. The US is actually at 180, ranked about 10th. Which means I can visit roughly 80% of the world's countries just by showing up with my passport. India, on the other hand, is ranked 80th, with access to 55 destinations. My cousins can visit about a quarter of the countries that I can. Afghanistan is at the bottom with 24, meaning an Afghan citizen can freely visit roughly 10% of the world. The gap between the strongest and weakest passports is 168 destinations, and according to Henley and partners, that's the widest it's been in 19 years that they've been tracking it. Global mobility is expanding, but the benefits are concentrating in the countries that were already at the top. Nobody chose where they were born, nobody applied for their first passport. The document that determines how much of the world you can access were assigned to you at birth based on geography, and there's no merit-based system for upgrading it. You either won the passport lottery or you didn't. Let's get back to my cousins for a second. Because what made their experience so frustrating wasn't just the rejection. It was how the decision was made. The U.S. Embassy processes hundreds of visa applications per day, and a consulate officer typically spends about 2 or 3 minutes on each interview. In that time, they're evaluating whether the applicant has strong enough ties to their home country, like a stable job, property, family, financial roots, just something to make it likely that they'll return after their visit rather than overstaying. What's crazy to me is that the officer has almost complete discretion because their decision doesn't require approval from a supervisor and the applicant has no meaningful right to appeal. The system is designed to be fast because the volume is enormous. U.S. embassies and consulates processed over 10 million non-immigrant visa applications in 2024 alone. But that fast decision-making process also means that life-altering decisions are made in minutes by individuals who are just using pattern recognition and gut instinct to decide whether or not you can go. If the officer thinks that you look like someone who might overstay based on your age, your job, maybe your country of origin, your financial profile, stuff like that, well, they just stamp denied and you're done. My cousins have had stable jobs for years. They have family in India, and they had every reason to come back. But the officer who reviewed their application made a different judgment, twice. And they had no recourse other than to reapply and hope that someone else was behind the window next time. By the way, the thing that makes me the most angry about all of this is how expensive it is for them to even apply for a visa. In India, that cost is about $450 US, which when you do the conversion, it's give or take like 45 to 50,000 rupees. And to put that in context, the average monthly income in India is about 30 to 35,000. So if you have a family of four, just to apply is going to cost you 5 to 6 months of salary. I mean, you also have to consider that there are not a bunch of U.S. embassies in India. So like, for example, my cousins had to go from Bangalore to Chennai, which was an overnight trip. It was pretty far. But just put yourself in the shoes of an Indian person who does all of this stuff. They pay the money, they take the trip, and then in 3 minutes, someone is just like, you're not going. Have fun. Bye. I mean, that's just wild to me. But every country with an embassy runs a version of this system. The criteria differ, the rejection rates differ, and the level of bureaucracy also differs. But the core dynamic is the same everywhere. A government employee decides in minutes whether a stranger from another country is allowed to cross a border, and the decision is shaped as much by where the applicant comes from as by who they actually are. Now let's talk about why some passports are stronger than others. The strength of a passport comes down to reciprocity, economics, and risk assessment, and all three are intertwined. Reciprocity is the simplest factor. If country A lets country B's citizens visit without a visa, then country B is more likely to return the favor. Over time, wealthy and politically stable countries build extensive networks of reciprocal visa-free agreements with each other, which is why European passports are so strong. Decades of regional integration through the European Union created a bloc where citizens of 27 countries can live and work freely in any of the other 26, and that is internal freedom extended outward into bilateral agreements with countries around the world. Economics play a bigger role than most people realize. Countries grant visa-free access to passports whose holders are likely to spend money and go home. A Japanese tourist visiting Thailand is statistically likely to book hotels, eat at restaurants, buy things, and return to Japan where they have a high-paying job and a stable life. The economic incentive for Thailand to make that visit easy is quite obvious. An applicant from a country with lower average income, though, and higher immigration rates, and a weaker passport reciprocity represents a completely different risk profile, and so the barriers go up. Visa application interviews, financial documentation, proof of ties to home, all that stuff. The uncomfortable truth here is that underneath all of this, the visa system is, at its core, a filtering mechanism that sorts people by the country they were born in and uses that as a proxy for how trustworthy, economically valuable, and likely to go back home they are. It's efficient in the sense that it processes millions of applications per year and mostly keeps immigration flows manageable, but it's also a system where a doctor in Lagos and a college dropout in LA have dramatically different access to the world, not because of anything that they've done, but because of where they were born, and the gap between them is wider now than it's ever been. So let's close this one out, because my cousins finally got their visa and made the trip. They actually visited last Christmas, and it was one of the best Christmases that we've ever had. And something that made the trip so special is how many times they acknowledged how happy they were to be here. I'm not saying the struggles they had to go through to actually get their visa were fair, but maybe in a sense it really helped them appreciate the trip. I mean, sometimes when I go on vacation, I don't know if I appreciate it as much as I should. And I think next time I travel, I'm going to start to do that and take a look at that US passport that's able to get me there so easily. Stay informed, stay curious. Travel and see as much of the world as you can, and we'll see you tomorrow.